is Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney. Well, this afternoon, the chemist, as you just heard, at the center of the state drug lab scandal is being arraigned in Boston Municipal Court. The charges, witness intimidation and falsifying records. We'll have to wait and see what that's all about, as witness intimidation seems like a strange charge. Also on our docket this afternoon, the sparks did not fly at two congressional debates yesterday. If you missed them, that's because the one between 6th District Congressman John Tierney and challenger Richard Tessay was not televised. And the one between Joe Kennedy III and Sean Bielant won't make air until Sunday morning. We will get into all of that and, of course, discuss the passing of BU President John Silver. Joining me today for our Week in Review are Jack Sullivan, Senior Investigative Reporter for Commonwealth Magazine, David Wedge of the Boston Herald, and Joanna Weiss of the Boston Globe. Welcome to everybody.
Hi.
Thank you, Emily. Thank you.
All right, so Boston Globe is reporting that apparently under the broadly written witness intimidation statute, Dukin's mishandling of this drug evidence falls under that. I don't know why. I mean, falsifying records, I get that. She made up stuff on her resume, but I'm not sure. It doesn't seem like a very strong charge.
It's probably just the initial charge, you know, something to get the clock started, something to be able to hold her on, bring her into court, get a bond or a bail set on her, and take away her passport and, you know, just make sure that she's on the radar screen, get some, you know, pre-trial probation. There's plenty more charges to come, especially like your story just said, 34,000 potential cases. This is just a holding charge, I think.
Yeah, and witness intimidation is a pretty broad charge. If the state police went and talked to her and let her know that she's a target of this investigation, and she talked to anyone involved in any one of those 34,000 cases, anyone at the lab, any of her superiors, any of her supervisors, underlings, anything, that could be construed as witness intimidation. So
also,
that's probably
she upped the charges against a lot of these people. That's witness intimidation. If you're adding to the weight of a drug sample or something like that, I suppose you could say.
The falsifying records makes much more sense, but
That's not much of a charge either.
Yeah, but as Jack said, it's probably just to get, you know, maybe they had some concerns and they needed to move on her for some reason. Now, maybe they want to get her in and squeeze her to get people that may also possibly be involved.
Mm. Well, that's what's fascinating to me. I mean, so much is fascinating about this story. But, you know, one thing is just, you know, the many parts of the wheels of justice. I mean, this is like an SVU episode or something where you can really sort of see what's, you know, all the things that kind of lead to a conviction. But the other thing is, it seems as if it was very hard for people to call an employee on something that she was doing that was quite obviously at least very extraordinary, out of the ordinary. I mean, this woman was handling, what, three times as many cases as usual. I can't imagine she didn't act in some way
Apparently
unstable.
People did, though, call attention to it, but...
Yeah, they brought it to, from my understanding, from the stories I've read, is that they brought it to the attention of supervisors who, they let it pass. They were getting convictions, they were getting results, they were moving, you know, in a situation that usually everything moves at a snail's pace. I mean, she's pumping out five times what everybody else is.
Then there is some accountability there.
Yeah.
I mean, there are definitely other people who, other heads might roll.
It sounds a lot like institutional corruption to
it
me,
does.
Is what
I
it
mean,
sounds like.
She was doing this thing called dry labbing, where she tested some samples but eyeballed others, you know, basically took a guess at what the substance was. And according to some reports, she took her orders directly from assistant DAs asking for the test, which kind of let them, you know, get around the chain of command. So if it came directly from DAs, you'll say, this is a guy, we need to get him on this, we need to get him on that. And suddenly, before you know it, that's what the drug
two
is.
Two quick things. The fact that they have that term, even that someone created that term, that tells me that's, you know, that's something that is known
to be. Yeah, it's like how many gumballs are in this jar.
I heard that on a Law and Order episode,
it's something
actually
you should be watching for. The other thing is, today's paper, I had a little piece with Dan Conley, and I talked to him last night, and
He won't talk to me. He doesn't seem to want to get too near this story.
he doesn't, but, you know, he did say to me, he said that, you know, to kind of not put too much stock into this talk that the DAs were talking directly to people in the lab.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, they have the right to call and find out, you know, hey, is that sample ready? That it just because they called doesn't necessarily mean they said, hey, we want to nail this guy. Can you make sure that the drugs come in at a certain weight? They could just be saying, where's our results? We have to go to trial.
But also, she seemed, from everything that I've seen so far, she seems to be very pliable in wanting to make sure that, you know, she does what is expected and what's wanted from her lab. And, I mean, now it's coming out that, you know, she falsified her resume and her degree, probably, you know, needed the to stay in the good graces of prosecutors and of her supervisors. So she did, and in no way am I forgiving what she did, but I can see how she may have been doing this thinking that she's doing the right thing.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it was a do-good motion.
Although the other thing I've heard is that part, and again, this is the fascinating sort of psychological element of this story, that part of her motivation was an unhappy home life.
What?
And I've seriously heard that part of it is just sort of wanting to excel at work in order to sort of overcompensate for other areas of her life where she was having a lot of
trouble.
What
about, I don't know any of the details of her life.
You know,
I know she changed her name. Her father's name is Khan, K-H-A-N. And she added the D-O-O.
She was supposedly going through.
That's all I know.
Supposedly going through a messy divorce, and you know, I haven't seen all the details on it, but apparently that's kind of the backstory, that she was having a lot of personal problems at home.
And she just kind
threw
of
threw herself
out
into her work.
But but as Jack said, I mean, you know, she's doing five times what other chemists
9,
are doing.
9,000 a year.
I could see maybe twice as much, maybe, but even that's a stretch. Five times, I mean, that's red flags all over the place.
Oh, and some supervisor who doesn't call on that is willingly overlooking.
And now it's who's going to roll on who. That's what I think the dominoes are going to start to fall. The governor's obviously not happy.
When you have the commissioner of public health resigning over it, the dominoes have already begun
to fall. That's right.
Yeah, well, this is just, as I just say, Jack, the tip of the iceberg, because she will undoubtedly be charged with something far more serious. I can't.
Absolutely.
And then the other shoe to drop is, you know, what's going to happen the first time one of these guys gets let out by
kill
someone?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be an awful
or
scandal.
Something worse. I mean, some horrible.
It's going to be.
I mean, a lot of them are drug cases. I mean, I don't mean to minimize that, but I don't think a lot of these are. Well, some of them are convicted murderers, but not a lot of them.
I don't think any convicted murderers will be let out because of this. But
not on this.
But there are a lot of guys with gang related charges that maybe they only got nailed on drugs, but they're considered impact players in the gang world, and there's certainly guys that may have violence in their past.
And if they're back on the street, then other things can kind of roll and happen.
Exactly.
All right, talking to David Wedge from the Boston Herald, Joanna Weiss from the Boston Globe, and Jack Sullivan, senior investigative reporter for Commonwealth Magazine. I have become very interested in the John Tierney, Richard Tse race, because I've also been dragged into this in an unflattering way, in case you didn't know. So this week, the Tierney campaign, or it was revealed, I should say, by the Boston Globe, that the Tierney campaign hired famed libel lawyer Howard Cooper.
Don't point it.
I can't help it. Dave Wedge knows him because he was on the losing end of that case that Howard Cooper tried several years ago involving Judge Ernest Murphy. At any rate, enough of that, Dave. So they didn't want, the Tierney campaign didn't want the Globe to report certain items about John Tierney's taxes. Well, you know, so why do you hire a lawyer? They hadn't even printed them yet. So they've really gone after the media. I've had a number of very bizarre exchanges myself, which I feel comfortable revealing now. And this started over the summer. We asked for an interview. First of all, we asked for Tierney and Tse to come on the set together. They wouldn't. So Tse came without Tierney. I mean, whenever you have one person, it's one-sided. Mm-hmm. You know, so they accused me of being biased, hostile. And then they said, we disagree on several points. For example, her complete invention of the purchase, talking about me now, the invention of a purchase of a helicopter by Mrs. Tierney. I don't even know what they were talking about. I did look up Laurel Sweet, apparently reported something about it. So, I mean, they were just grabbing at straws here for reasons not to talk to me. And then even when they acknowledged that that was false, that I had nothing to do with reporting something about a helicopter, they stood by their, you know, ground that I'm hostile, inaccurate, and biased. So, I mean,
well, you're getting a little taste.
Well, I know. I mean, I. You know.
It's like
Adrian Walker once said, it's the last bastion of scoundrels to attack the media for problems that are yours.
Well, you know, obviously I have some experience in this, so
yes,
I have to choose my words carefully. But in this case, you know, he's a sitting U.S. congressman. Everything in his life is an open book, and it should be. And there's nothing wrong with the Globe asking to see his tax returns. There's nothing wrong with the Globe reporting on his tax returns and asking questions of experts as to why he won't release his tax returns. That's all, you know, fair reporting privilege. That's ethically sound.
Well, they're media.
Talk about intimidating. They were trying to intimidate the Globe by hiring Howard Cooper so that they wouldn't report what they wanted to report.
Their media strategy seems to be to just cloud everything so much, to introduce so many different layers of confusion to the story. Because when you start to try to read through, when you're dealing with talking heads, and she said about, sometimes literally, about tax returns and numbers and figures and who, you emerge from a story like that as a reader saying, well, I don't know what's up and what's down. If you make things fuzzy enough that no one can kind of point a straight line, then all of a sudden Tierney's got the benefit of the doubt.
Well, one of the problems that he has, too, is that he earlier this year had said, you know, we've always released the tax returns, they're all out there. And Mike Resendez, who was the reporter for the Globe, couldn't find them anywhere. Couldn't find any reference to them, couldn't find any stories to that were written about them. And there's nothing that they could provide that would show that he's released it before. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, this is a long this has been a process for him that's gone on quite a long time of not releasing his tax returns.
All right, here's I just wanted to hear this exchange yesterday. This is WGBH reporter Adam Reilly, who went over to the debate yesterday, and he asked Representative John Tierney why he's hired Howard Cooper.
We wanted to be able to make clear to the Globe that we thought they needed the facts before they wrote an article.
Why do you need to hire a libel attorney to do that? Why not just...
Well, Howard's not just a libel attorney. Howard's an attorney. He's an attorney that we've represented. He's a noted lawyer in a lot of different areas.
So he's saying, why do you need to hire an attorney to get the Globe to fire...
Well, they actually...
Why don't you just report the facts? And then if they're not the facts, then go after them afterwards.
He has a counsel. I'm sure John Tierney has plenty of counsel.
He actually does. And I was standing right next to Adam at the time when he was asking those questions. Yeah. And you could see the defensiveness coming up on Congressman Tierney. One of the things you have to remember, when the Globe wrote the first day story, they included a letter from his tax attorney that they had hired to review the taxes.
From Tierney's
and his
tax
interpretation.
Attorney, who had a different interpretation from many of the other tax attorneys. Yeah.
That issue is whether this money that Patrice Tierney got from her brother-in-law and over this offshore gambling operation, whether it was a gift or taxable.
I would love
that. The family
like that.
Claims it was a gift.
They're saying the question is whether it was properly reported on his tax returns,
right,
which is a fair question. The story in the Globe and Tierney's party line has always been this was already adjudicated in the case, and he was found to have been cleared, and that it was clearly a gift. The Globe raised questions about that, and you know, through their own reporting, and those questions are fair. I think at the end of the day, what this is really about is John Tierney is in the fight of his political life. He's on the ropes. He doesn't want to talk about this stuff. But unfortunately for him, it's not going away.
Fortunately for him, and now, you know, to say is probably going to accuse me of being biased, he's a very ineffectual candidate. He doesn't grab the moment. He doesn't seize the moment. He has no affect. I mean, he's flat.
It seems like he's
should
only
be doing
talking,
better.
It seems like he's only talking about this.
Yeah.
And he should be
There's
talking
much,
about more.
Yeah.
Yeah, the debate
you
yesterday.
You were there yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, he tried to grab the Brown approach by talking about being bipartisan and trotted out his record as a Senate minority leader and how he was able to work for Democrats. What I found interesting is that he tried to have it both ways, because he was talking about, you know, his relationship with Democrats and how he could work with them. But on the other side, he was talking about if he's elected, he'd be part of the majority of the House. He talked about his support for the Medicare program to keep it sacrosanct for 55 and over. He talked about his opposition and wanting to defeat Obamacare. So, you know, he's trying to have it both ways.
Well, he and Scott Brown are very similar that way. And they have this very similar argument that I think Scott Brown and his backers are making more effectively and certainly more loudly, which is, you know, here's this guy who in Massachusetts has a history of actually having a lot of independents and saying, you know, we don't just want a straight line of Democrats. We'd like maybe a Republican in the governor's office to offset the legislature. So, you know, the idea of having a Massachusetts-style Republican in Congress to make that kind of argument and put that argument forth within the party is an attractive argument for a lot of voters. The counter argument is that guy going to just get swallowed up by the majority and we won't hear that Massachusetts voice at all, and then we lose the whole farm?
But I think, should be doing better is my point.
To your point, Emily, I think the voters agree with you that he's ineffective because he's 7 points down in the latest poll. I mean, granted, there's 22% undecided, but still, at this point, with everything that's been happening to John Tierney, with the flood of ads that we've seen, that should be a closer race.
Well, Tierney's been getting the Democratic machine behind him of late. I know the National Party hasn't put money into the race, but locally, he picked up the firefighters the other day. He's picking up a lot of union support. Elizabeth Warren, I believe, was at an event with him the other day. And so he's really getting the machine cranking. And if Tessé doesn't pick up his game in the next couple of weeks,
he's
going to lose a huge opportunity for the Republican Party in Massachusetts is going to be blown.
20 years ago, the same district, Nicky Mavroulis had the Democratic Party behind him as well, and we saw how that turned out. The difference was that Torkelson took advantage of it, knew how to attack, and I'm not sure Tessé is at that point.
Which is a little surprising. He's run a statewide race before. I mean, it's not like he's just a state. And look at Scott Brown, who was just a state senator and managed to, in certain special circumstances, run a pretty terrific statewide campaign.
I talked to Joanna Weiss from the Boston Globe, Dave Wade from the Boston Herald, and Jack Sullivan from Commonwealth Magazine. So we'll start with the small and move to the big, because part of this Scott Brown, Elizabeth Warren contest has now gotten fairly complicated. But one of the things was not complicated. It was this week when, Scott Brown, a campaign event was held earlier in the week. Then supporters were taunting Elizabeth Warren with war whoops. Here's a little of that. All right. Now, I'm one of the ones who actually thought that Scott Brown's opening attacks on Elizabeth Warren during the debate last week were effective. Now, when he turns to this, clearly she's not Native American. But this is downright juvenile. If he had just stuck with that, moved on, he made his point, he never needs to really bring it up again. But to have the campaign, I doubt they did it with, that they, it was condoned by Scott Brown or even anybody in his campaign, but they did it, and it's not good.
And now they've got Cherokee Nation mad at them. I mean, they've really turned things around in a way they didn't want to. No, I mean, I agree with you that I think this was a couple people getting caught up in the moment and getting out of hand. This was not something that Scott Brown suggested. I don't even know if it's something that Eric Fernstrom suggested, although that's a little bit shadier. Because, his guys are known for some pretty hardball tactics and for, that sort of gruff on the street style of campaigning, which can be effective if you don't cross a line like that.
Like Mike Capuano, blood on the streets.
There you go.
But I think it's also it goes to this insensitivity. I think a lot of times that people who aren't minorities don't understand. You hear a lot of people defending that by saying, hey, it happens all the time at Florida State games or Atlanta Braves games.
The Redskins.
Right, but these are the same people that, probably watched Lone Ranger when they were kids and didn't realize that Tonto was Spanish for stupid. they just...
But if you're in politics now, you should know better. Yeah. And it's one thing to say the frat boys at the Florida game, and it's another thing
to be... And the Atlanta Braves are one thing, or the Redskins.
Right. No, I'm not defending them. I'm just saying that that's...
This was a taunt. The tomahawk chop for the Braves or the Redskins is a positive.
It's a rallying cry, right? This was a taunt. And I think you touched on it. You mentioned frat boy. That's exactly what this was. Yes. This was sophomoric frat boy mob mentality. It was spontaneous. For anyone to suggest that, Scott Brown or anyone high in the campaign condone this is just wrong. I mean, this was street politics where there was a lot of tension. There's a lot of tension at all these rallies. I was at a parade in Marlboro a couple weeks ago, and these people don't like each other. They really don't want to be around each other. And you got this Native American backdrop, and that's like that's twisting the knife for the Warren people, and they took it too far, and it was inappropriate.
Right. I think the other part of it, too, is you said it, Emily, at the beginning, that he was fairly effective at the beginning of that debate.
He was.
And I think he was until the point of where he said, just look at her, as if you can look at somebody and tell what their ethnicity is.
I missed that. Did he say that?
Yeah, more than once. A couple times. Yeah.
Twice he said, just look at her.
Yeah, that's taking it too far, too, I think.
All right, so, Jack, you know more about this because you were involved in some of this too. So earlier this week, coincidentally, both the Boston Globe and the Boston Herald had all this detailed reporting about Warren when she petitioned the United States Supreme Court in the 1990s on behalf of a steel company. The steel company didn't want to pay millions of dollars into a health care program for retired blue-collar workers. Congress was requiring them to do so. Warren was paid $10,000 to write a petition asking SCOTUS to review it. So basically, these stories were saying she wasn't on the side of the little guy. You know, she was on the side of the big guy. So, I mean, I'm not going to come out and just say this because I don't know it for sure, but my guess is that this came from some kind of opposition research from the Scott Brown campaign. Now, you know a little bit more about it, Jack.
Not so much that I know about it, Emily, as much as we all do from being on the inside, knowing how, you know, stories germinate. It's just, I mean, what are the odds that both the Globe and the Herald have the same brief on the same day? And when you look at it, neither the Brown campaign, neither the Globe nor the Herald quoted the Brown campaign directly about this. You know, the Globe had a tangential quote going to something that wasn't germane to it, and the Herald had nothing. And it's not that it's on the Globe or the Herald, because we all take handoffs at some point. You know the agenda of your source. You know that you need to stand it up. They did. It was good reporting on both their parts. But what's interesting is that Brown is starting to lose this patina of, you know, the good guy of the BFF, you know, best friend forever. And he's starting to get his hands a little
also bloody. Say, well, I don't know anything about it. I mean, you just look at all the reporting that's being done. It's like, as if he has no idea where this stuff came from.
Yeah, and it just doesn't ring true. You know, there's just too much to say.
Well, and it's going to come. It comes from the other side as well. And don't think that you know, both the Warren campaign and Democratic interest groups aren't digging up all, you know, aren't spending a lot of time digging up anything they can about Scott Brown and compiling lists. So, I mean, that, you know, this is what happens in campaigns, and it is completely fair game. I mean, what happens with reporters is that, you didn't get this from me, and they get a tip, and then they go and they follow it up and they verify it on their own. And that's,
you know, it's very unusual that both the Herald and the Globe went with it, because usually when something is sourced like that, the people receiving it say, who else did you give this to?
True.
And if they gave it to somebody else, they usually won't go with it, but maybe they didn't.
But, it was a brief that was right out of the Supreme Court. I mean, difficult to get because it's 17 years old. But, the other thing that I found interesting in it, too, is that, you know, with this People's Pledge that both Brown and Warren signed, they don't have the third-party advertising coming in to do these attacks for them. They've got to do it themselves. So if they can't get the newspapers to pick up on it, they're going to have to carry the fight themselves.
All right. Moving along, I'm talking here to Jack Sullivan from Commonwealth Magazine, Joanna Weiss from the Boston Globe, and Dave Wedge from the Boston Herald. What more can we say about the presidential race this week? A couple of, you know, things were fuming here. There's Mitt Romney. Let's see, this is the video, of course, released by Mother Jones. It's the same publication behind the video of the secretly taped Florida fundraiser for Romney. And this is Mitt Romney speaking in a 1985 event explaining how Bain Capital works. Really, the point, I'm going to play this, really the point of this is how this stuff is coming out in dribs and drabs, even though it's been around for some case months, and in this case, you know, decades.
Bain Capital is an investment partnership which was formed to invest in startup companies and ongoing companies, then to take an active hand in managing them, and hopefully 5 to 8 years later to harvest them at a significant profit.
What's wrong with that?
But harvesting,
it's being used,
you sound so,
it's
like
being used
sci-fi.
As a pejorative once again. But, you know, he's speaking honestly there.
Well, again, and as you were saying about the dribs and drabs, this is the way campaigns work. I mean, a year or two ago, I interviewed a leading GOP tactician. He, you know, part of what he does is he trains college students. He had trained James O'Keefe, the guy who does has done his own sort of damning videos. And, you know, one of the things that he taught people was, you release a little bit at a time, so you keep the story going. You don't give everything you've got in that one big dump. You have this, and then you whet their appetite, and then a few days later, you add a little, here's this video. So there's more to come, certainly.
I just have to say, I mean, I'm the son of a small businessman, an independent businessman, and I don't see the problem with what he said. I mean, that's business.
I don't either.
That's what they do.
And it's honest. It's
yeah,
true.
And there's nothing wrong with it.
Well,
and
he's not putting it in those words now. That's what's wrong with it.
Well, He's not right. He won't run away from that statement. Maybe the word harvest. I don't think he meant
like the Chinese harvesting the organs of
again,
the
people. You know, we wrote about this stuff when he ran in 2008, and basically, you know, we came up with all these companies that failed under Bain and outsourcing and layoffs. But you know, their party line has always been that in venture capital, you know, if you got a 2/3 batting average, you're doing great. And Bain had better than that. And you know, a lot of jobs were created through Bain, a lot more than it created through government passing legislation.
The problem is, Dave, you know? It's the piling on effect that on top of the 47% video that was released last week makes him sound cold, detached, mercenary.
Well,
it may not be anything wrong with it, but
no, that's unfair. Business in America.
Fair, I mean, unfair, sorry, more is to come. Yeah. I mean, this circulated earlier, I think, during the primary, but I'm sure it will come back. There's an old picture of, I think it was an ad for Bain when Romney was young and heading it, and it was like all these Bain guys standing holding wads of money. You know, it's a stunning image, and I guarantee you, you'll see it again before November.
I think one of the things about all these videos coming out is, Who is it changing? Whose mind is it changing? You know, it's not changing anybody's mind that's against him, and anybody that's for him agrees with what
he's
saying.
Three guys in Ohio. That's who they're aiming
really.
At.
And then
you might be surprised. It could change people's minds.
But it's also, you know, you've got these videos surfacing of President Obama from 1998 talking about the redistribution of wealth. I mean, it's who doesn't believe that he believes in this. Not so much redistribution as far as the word itself goes, but more of closing that income inequality gap. It's the same thing. I think it's more for people in our line of work to look at, analyze, and put out there, because I don't think the average voter who's already made up his mind is going to be swayed.
Yeah,
one
but
way
you know,
other.
Talking about the redistribution of wealth, which is something that Obama does clearly believe in, and that video, by the way, had been slightly edited. Versus dismissing 47% of the electorate, there's a big difference. I mean, it's offensive to a lot of people. Whether those people were ever Romney supporters or not, I have to think some of them were. It can be offensive.
The 47% video is a lot more damaging than this one. I mean, that 47% video came at a private fundraiser where he was with a bunch of rich guys. And that kind of reinforced the image of him as this country club, old boy network type of guy.
Especially with the dishes clinking in the background.
Exactly.
I mean,
you know,
the atmospherics were brilliant.
I'm shocked it didn't come out in 08.
But, you know, that which is the other part of it, too. It's that he thought he was talking to this private fundraiser, and I think that's the charge that's going to be hardest for him to shake, which is he shapes his message to the audience. And that goes back to, you know, the shape-shifting, etch-a-sketch, flip-flopping accusations. Mm-hmm. And I think that's more damaging than the content.
All right. Before we move on to our thumbs-up, thumbs-down segment, we got to mention the passing of longtime Boston University president and then Chancellor John Silber. I got to know him pretty well over the decades, interviewed him many, many times. I was talking to Scott Lehigh from The Globe yesterday. I mean, he could rip into any reporter to the best of them. But I ended up, I think, having a pretty decent and respectful relationship with him. God knows why. He was intimidating. He was cantankerous, but he was brilliant and thoughtful. And as John Keller was saying this morning, he defied, you know, the political correctness atmosphere on college campuses, and sometimes to his detriment, sometimes to his positive. But he was really a force, and there's no question he put Boston University on the map, you know, brought them back from the brink of financial collapse and made them, you know, a first-rate university where people actually were willing to pay gladly, you know, $54,000 to go.
I covered him, you know, from the time he ran for governor through his, you know, as chairman of the Board of Ed. I liked the guy. I liked him a lot, you know, and you're right. He could be very difficult to deal with, but he was fearless. I don't think there's anybody that cared more or did more for education than he did at all levels. You know, you talk about BU, but there was also what he did for Chelsea. And also making sure that ed reform was implemented. One story that I remember this morning from 1990, and you remember how tense that whole election season was, we organized a softball game between statewide candidates and the State House press just to try to ease tensions. John Silber showed up, which shocked everybody.
Really?
He came there with a glove. I mean, he had on wingtip slacks and a polo shirt, but he came, he played right field. You know, he had the withered right arm, so he played with the glove on his left hand, took it off to throw the ball in. And just did it without a second thought. You know, I gained a lot of respect for him that day and also learned that, you know, he doesn't care what other people think.
No.
All of those tributes make me wonder what would have happened if he had won. I mean, you know, how this state might have been different if he
would
had.
Would have been fun.
Definitely.
See, I remember when Michael Regenberg, who was his press secretary at the time that he ran in 1990, used to work at Channel 5. And so it was Channel 5's Natalie Jacobson interview, which is largely credited with squashing his candidacy, when he barked at her, you know, over the question of what was his weaknesses, and also barked at her over something about the children at the table. You know, these are my cubs. You can't go after them. I mean, but I can remember Michael saying, you know, to me at the time, we ran that interview twice. She says, you know, you've destroyed his candidacy. He'll never get it. I said, I thought, well, maybe this will actually help him. I mean, you know, because we went back and looked at it. I aired it on Greater Boston last night. It wasn't that bad. I mean, compared to stuff in elections this days, you know, getting your dander up over being asked
well
a question.
It was well juice of it, actually, that did it, you know, the way that he put it into an ad.
Yeah, he twisted it and put it in a sepia tone and made him look very onerous. And, yeah, exactly. That's what happened.
I mean, you know, that stuff happens all the time these days. So, you know, and nowadays, like, look at Chris Christie.
He barks
at reporters, and people love the guy for it. Yeah. So, it, you know, if that was 2012, it might have helped.
You name me a college president, especially locally, who's willing to weigh in on any kind of an issue involving our community.
Comment.
You know, like the Chelsea schools, or, you know, John Stilber was defending, you know, convicted rapist Ben Laguerre. He came to the defense of convicted murderer Ed Bowser, just saying he's done enough time. He went to the parole board before him. So somebody said he adopted all these children. One of his kids died of AIDS, which kind of turned his head around about homosexuality because he was, you know, anti-gay for a while.
I thought, you know, the Mayor Menino's comments were pretty telling, too. He said, you know, that there hasn't really been a better friend to Boston. And I think that was pretty strong statement.
Yeah, like I said, I think the greatest thing about him is that he never said no comment. He told you what was on his mind.
But you're right that's what a college president should be doing, someone with that kind of position in the community. I mean, now, you know, it's very much a fundraising job, and it's such an internal, and you know, and everyone's so cautious because all they have to do is raise money. And he probably
wasn't too good at that.
Well, but he raised the profile of Boston University, you're right, in an incredible way, and he was a voice in the community. Mm.
Talking to Joanna Weiss of the Boston Globe, Dave Wedge from the Boston Herald, and Jack Sullivan from Commonwealth Magazine. When we return, thumbs up, thumbs down, where we ask our panel for quick takes on all the news, large and small, from the week. I'm Emily Rooney. You're listening to Boston Public Radio. This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney. It's time for Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down. Joining me to run down stories from throughout the week are the Boston Herald's David Wedge, Commonwealth Magazine senior investigative reporter Jack Sullivan, and Joanna Weiss from the Boston Globe. Gentlemen and ladies, get your thumbs ready. First up, this is on our food and bans. We got to do this every week. Food and bans. All right, on the food agenda here, thumbs up, thumbs down. Do you believe there is going to be a worldwide bacon shortage, or is it a hoax? Thumbs up if you believe it.
Thumbs down. I don't believe it.
Yeah, thumbs down to big bacon, I guess. I can't imagine.
Not a bacon person?
Everything in moderation, but every time I eat bacon, I'm really happy while I'm doing it, and then I really regret it about 10 minutes later.
Thumbs down, but I've been getting used to it by eating the fake bacon the past couple of days.
So you don't believe it? This is one of those generated, you know, then they're going to up the price of, you know, pork and all that, but that doesn't even be a bacon shortage. It's not true. All right.
I agree.
Here's a good one. Thumbs up, thumbs down on Kansas high school students rebelling against Michelle Obama's healthy lunch. They filmed a music video called "We Are Hungry," rebelling against the low level of a caloric, that's an 800 calorie lunch.
We need more bacon, say Kansas high school students. You know, thumbs up. It's free speech. They can say what they want. I like the idea of dueling videos.
Thumbs up. I mean, you know, I encourage the schools to lessen how much junk food the kids are eating. Let them, I mean, pizza, things like that. Kids need a lot of food when they're playing sports and running around the way high school kids do. I know my daughter's got like a wooden leg. She eats constantly.
Yeah.
I give them a thumbs up. And I think it's creating this black market. Down in New Bedford, there's somebody that's selling 50 cent shots of chocolate syrup for people to put into their milk down there.
That's cool. Yeah, I have to give them a thumbs up, too. It's kind of clever.
I lived on chocolate milk when I was in school.
Yeah, I never liked chocolate milk. All right. You're into the moving into the band section. Thumbs up, thumbs down on New York Senator Chuck Schumer asking Tide, the laundry detergent company, to change the appearance of its detergent pods because they look too much like candy. What about, what's that, the dishwasher soap, same one, Cascade. Mm. Doesn't that look like candy, too?
You know what else looks
pods?
Like candy? Medicine looks like candy. Yeah. There's lots of stuff that looks like candy. Keep your kids away from it.
How delicious does paint look?
It smells good, too.
Glue.
Well, thumbs up. I think it's taking our mind off of sequestration, so...
The rest of you are thumbs down, I take it on that.
Thumbs down.
I mean, come on. I love those pods, by the way.
Yeah,
that's changed
cool.
my life.
The dishwasher pods are really great.
Because it got that sparkle stuff right loaded right in there, so you don't have to put it in separately, and it's awesome. So, I love
progress.
That.
Just
progress.
Don't eat them.
Just don't eat them. All right. This is sad. Thumbs up, thumbs down on Beach Boy Mike Love kicking out Brian Wilson, Al Jardine, and longtime member David Marks from the group. I just saw them on their 50th anniversary tour. They were here at the Bank of America Pavilion. It was a great concert, Brian Williams. I mean, come on, Brian Wilson. How can you kick out Brian Wilson?
Yeah, thumbs down. Thumbs down. Thumbs
you can't
down.
Kick how out
he,
Brian Wilson.
How could
you
he?
Can call yourself the Beach Boys, but you're what, like the beach with an E on the end or something. You'd have to. They'd have to change the spelling or something.
The Beach Geezers. I give it a thumbs down, absolutely.
Yeah, that doesn't work at all. Well, I mean, good luck to them, too. All right, there will be no 51st anniversary tour, I predict. All right, thumbs down, thumbs up, thumbs down. Will you read J.K. Rowling's new non-Harry Potter novel, The Casual Vacancy, Dave? No,
thumbs down. Not my genre.
Did you ever read Harry Potter?
No, I'm a biography guy.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of waiting to get through all the Harry Potters with my kids. I love the way there's an X on the cover. I mean, you know, they leave nothing to chance in their marketing of this book. Right? It's for adult X. I might have to avoid it for that reason alone.
I give it a thumbs down unless Harry Potter has grown up and is the main adult theme in it.
With a Fabio-like mane.
Really?
Thumbs up, thumbs down on people making a big deal about Lady Gaga's 25-pound weight gain.
Thumbs down. I like Lady Gaga.
No, I love
Lady Gaga.
I love Lady Gaga, and I agree. I mean, one of the things I like about her is that she is who she wants to be, and it makes me sad that I Kelly Clarkson has seemed to have gotten thinner over the years. That's one of the things I kind of liked about her. No, you don't have to have a sticky stick figure to be a pop star.
So wait, what's thumbs up, thumbs down?
About whether people should be making a big deal about it.
Well, thumbs up.
Yeah.
Because she's one of the biggest pop stars in the world, and you notice when they blow up.
Yeah, 25 pounds.
Or lose a bunch of weight. You know,
it becomes a story of its own for reasons that, you know, so I think that's a legitimate story.
It's a legitimate story, but I guess I want her to stand her ground.
Apparently.
Well, that's stand more and more ground.
Well, that's what makes it a story.
She's on the edge of glory.
It's a story.
She's
all right.
Over the edge of glory.
Thumbs up, thumbs down. Would you read Monica Lewinsky's tell-all memoir about her time as President Clinton's
what else is
mistress?
There to tell?
I don't know.
No.
I'm going to say thumbs up because I know Jessica's going to buy it, my wife. And if it's in the house, I'm going to read it. Just like I read Tori Spelling's book, and I'll deny I said that.
Yeah, you did. You read Tori Spelling's book?
I did, because Jessica had it, and it was
there.
Did
your wife?
Did you learn anything? Did you learn anything interesting?
Joanna, like 50 Shades of Grey, it's going to come into our office. We're going to need it for research purposes, right?
And you're going to be under the desk. Mm-hmm.
All right, and finally, moving into our sports category. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Was Bill Belichick's $50,000 fine too high? Of course, he grabbed one of those substitute NFL refs last week after Sunday's game. Jack, too high, too low?
I think it was just right. I mean, I love Bill Belichick. I love the Patriots. But, you know, it's a hard and fast rule. You don't touch the officials. And he did, and he admitted it. So thumbs up. I think that's right on the money.
I agree with Jack.
Perfect. No, I agree. It's a big number. I actually don't think it's going to crimp his style too much. It's maybe cut into his hoodie budget a little, but I don't think it's going to
hurt
him.
All right, and finally, thumbs up, thumbs down. Are you happy the real NFL refs are back, or were you kind of enjoying the entertainment of all that over the last 3 weeks?
Thumbs up. Thank God. Thank God. These guys were awful.
I don't know how awful they were.
They were the worst officiating in NFL history.
Best sign at last night's game was now we can yell at the real refs.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point. And when as soon as they start making all their bad calls, we'll be begging for the subs to come back.
I mean, literally games were lost.
It has been fun watching some people I know kind of twitching over the last few days, though.
All right, Joanna Weiss, Dave Wedge, Jack Sullivan, thank you so much for our week in review. And I see Kelly Crossley is back in Studio 3.
Emily, it's the end of the week, and we're at issue 25 out of our 30 issues in 30 days. Today, it's health care. Even though Obama's health care overhaul took a real beating this year, there's a new poll out that shows Obama dominating Romney on health care issues. We're going to look at why he's winning over voters. We'll also compare the two candidates' health care plans.
All righty, then. I'm Emily Rooney.
I'm Kelly Crossley. You're listening to Boston Public Radio.
I thought that was my line.